The Rain Podcast Business Summit 2021 from New York.
I hope everybody can hear me. I'm Brian Moffitt. I am CEO of National Public Media. So we are NPR's sponsorship subsidiary. And I've been involved with NPR and podcasts since they launched in 2005. My job right now is to grow sponsorship revenue across radio, digital, and podcasts. So the business of podcasts is really important to me. And with me is James Cridland, who is in Australia right now. So James, thanks for being here so early in the morning. Everybody should know James and his newsletter, Pod News, and his just efforts in the industry at keeping us all informed and trying to move the industry forward. So, James, thanks for being here. And you want to introduce yourself before we dive in?
Yes, I was just going to say that I've been in audio for since 1989, but you'd never have guessed, would you, from that? Anyway, there we are.
You want to say anything about yourself, who you are, what you do? I think everybody should know you, but just in case.
Yeah, well, so I'm editor of podnews.net, which is a daily podcast newsletter, as Brian has just said. I've been involved in podcasting since 2005, since before it went into the Apple ecosystem. Find this whole area really interesting and really a fascinating area to have a look at. So thank you so much, Brian, for asking me on today.
No problem. So this is a business summit. Let's talk about the business of being a podcast creator. So you are one of those. I guess the first question is making a living as a podcaster easier in 2021 for you than in 2019? Harder, the same? What's your view as a podcast?
Oh, I think both. Both easier and harder. So I think there are many, many more podcasts. Last year, there were two new podcasts launched every minute, which is an incredible stat. So it's harder, I think, to get your podcasts out there. Definitely harder to get them noticed, I think, because there are so many new shows out there. But on the flip side, I think there are many more tools and tools to make it easier to find your audience, but also tools to make it easier to edit stuff. So there's this incredible editor called Descript, which a lot of podcasters are using now, which just allows you to edit audio using a word processor. It's an incredible tool. There's more monetization options, as well, more platforms to promote your podcast on. So I think it is a lot harder because there are so many more great shows out there. And NPR makes an awful lot of those, but it's also easier because there are so many more tools on there as well.
Yeah, definitely. There's been a lot of movement there. So, I mean, you watch this space very closely, James. You mentioned NPR. So do you think bigger publishers and smaller or individual publishers have the same chance for success in today's market? Or do you think there's a bifurcation afoot?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there are benefits, obviously, as a bigger publisher, in that you can cross promote. So you can do interesting things like, for example, Serial. The Serial feed had Nice White Parents on there, which was a massive hit of last year. Wondery do a really clever job of promoting every new show that they have on all of their other feeds as well. And so I think if you're a large publisher, you have access to all of those types of things. But also as a small publisher, you can be very nimble and very quick, to end up doing things, which is, in a way, quite hard to do if you're part of a larger organization, as many podcasters are these days. So I think actually there are benefits in being small and nimble. There's a great podcast out there called Darknet Diaries, for example, which is very independent. Jack Rosider has done a great job of growing that, and he hasn't needed to be part of a large organization to end up doing that. But of course, there's benefits, and particularly there's benefits if you have a big microphone and a big radio transmitter as well, of course, because you can actually make sure that everybody who's tuning in to the radio gets to know about the podcasts that you're doing too.
Yeah, that's been a help. We find podcasts are the best promotional tool at NPR versus radio. Radio helps, but every time you do the survey and every time we look at Edison, it is, I heard about a podcast from either another podcast or an ad in a podcast. So that's familiar
yeah,
to hear.
Yeah, and no, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting, you can look at how radio can work. There's a great radio station in the UK, which we'll hear from later, called podcast radio, which again promotes a lot of new shows that people end up hearing. So I think, yeah, lots of different ways, you know, to find shows. I mean, I think also, if the one thing that the pandemic has taught us, it's how to use QR codes as we check into, you know, restaurants or check into individual areas. QR codes are a sleeping giant, I think, for podcasts and for a way of actually translating posters and stuff like that to a subscription to a podcast. And I'm surprised that more podcasters aren't using, you know, QR codes to push their new shows as well.
It's a really good point. I don't think we're doing that, so we should start too. So I think one of the things that's changed in my view is the subscription market. I think a lot of smaller publishers have been using Patreon and other tools to make real money to fund their podcast. And Spotify just announced they're aiming to help podcasters here, and Apple reportedly is too. So it seems like there's going to be a lot of steam behind subscriptions very soon. Do you think the industry is ready? And have we learned anything from Luminary, which didn't seem to get much traction early on?
Well, I mean, I think there are quite a few subscriptions, of course, already going. You know, you mentioned Patreon and those sorts of services and supporting casts and those types of companies as well. I think there are two things going on. Spotify appears to be allowing individual podcasters to choose what their price is going to be for their show. That's a very different model, as I understand it, to the Apple model, which reportedly is looking at a Luminary type model of here's an amount of money and you get all of these additional shows. So I think that there are two different models there to learn from. I think, you know, lessons from Luminary, maybe to listen to people who've been in the space for a while, because they or we do know what has worked and what hasn't worked in the past. But also, I think, you know, Luminary came onto the scene with a few larger names, but no well-known shows. And it wasn't a well-known platform either. I think Apple is a bit different. And I wonder whether or not we're going to see an interesting sort of experiment, really, seeing Spotify selling podcasts as an additional premium, whereas Apple selling a podcast platform as an additional premium. Will people want to pay for a podcast platform, or will people want to pay for a podcast? Because clearly we have a very intimate relationship with some of our favorite podcasters. So, or rather some of our favorite podcasts. We don't necessarily have an intimate relationship with podcasters unless you're really lucky. So, you know, we'll see whether or not it's the platform versus the podcast, which actually works there, I think.
Yeah, it's really good. But it's exactly how I see it. And I think I put my money on the podcast, honestly. I think that's what we've seen traction with Patreon and the other services that are out there early on in this. So we talked about Spotify. They did their Stream On event about 2 weeks ago. So out of that, aside from the subscriptions we just talked about, what do you think was the most meaningful thing for the industry that they announced?
Yeah, they announced an awful lot. I think the most meaningful thing is try not to announce your entire year's working slate in one day. That makes it really difficult for journalists to cover what you're doing. But I think it depends who you are. I think 80 new countries, which is 1 billion new people, is an incredible growth for Spotify. That's great for people that want to get their message out there. That's great for people that want to more people to hear their show, and they don't necessarily care about the monetization aspect. So that's an incredible thing. That's almost doubling the amount of countries that they're in. I think also for marketers, the expansion of Spotify's ad platform is really interesting. And the fact that in the US, you can now go on and buy using their platform around podcasts is really interesting. And actually seeing what they're planning on doing with their recent acquisition of Megaphone as well is, I think, going to be interesting too. So lots of different things, I think, coming out of that. And obviously, you know, signing Bruce Springsteen and and a former president is quite a thing too. So, you know, they made a lot of really interesting moves, I thought. What did you think was the biggest thing that you saw?
The thing I think I'm paying most attention to is the Spotify ad insertion. You know, I think they're in a very advantageous position in the market, given the size of their platform. and the number of podcasts they have that they can sell against on a different model than the rest of the industry, which is around, you know, IAB valid downloads, whereas they can now start to target actual listening. And that is a pretty big distinction. You know, that's been a hot button issue for me for years. So I'm curious if you think that will help drive the industry towards some kind of a meaningful listening metric that we can all scale, versus it just being something available on different platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the download metric, there's nothing wrong with that. We still get an awful lot of information out of that through IP address, through the work that many of the individual platforms have with, you know, companies like Nielsen and Tapad and so on, where you actually do get, you know, household information out of that. So I think that that's, you know, certainly one side. But, you know, you can clearly see that the young, not particularly engaged ad buyer might be interested in just going to Spotify because it's easy, because they'll offer all of the tools and it'll make it really easy and simple for them. I think the cleverer ad buyer will talk to individual publishers, will, you know, understand what makes podcasting different, and actually, you know, use the relationships that they have with, you know, great shows and great personalities to actually get their message over. So I think there's, you know, there's an interesting time, I think, now in this industry where all of a sudden we are seeing really simple automated tools to make it really easy for marketers to go out and spend money and see some results out of that. But hopefully they will also step up and actually use the rest of the podcasting landscape to actually do that too, I think.
I hope so too. That would be a nice future. So let's talk a little about Apple. I think they've been making some interesting moves too, aside from some of the reporting around what they might do in the monetization space. They're starting to make their own podcasts. So I'm a fan of For All Mankind, and they have a companion show for that now. What do you see them becoming a big original podcast creator? And if so, what impact do you think that might have?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, that's Apple TV Plus making a podcast. And they've put it on the Apple Podcasts platform, and that's fine. But it's also available everywhere else. The one that I was more interested in was the one that they launched in July of last year, Apple News Today. They released it in four different territories, I think, but the editorial is only of interest if you're in the US. There's no interest in the editorial if you're in the UK or other countries. And that is an actual Apple exclusive podcast. I would argue it's an Apple News podcast that they happen to have put onto Apple Podcasts, but there was no RSS feed that was published. It wasn't available on any of the other platforms. And that's interesting. And I wonder whether or not that's the first of these that we're going to end up seeing, or whether Apple are going to use some of their music licensing to do a bit more of the Beats One type of, you know, music radio catch-up services that they've been doing as well. Because there's real opportunity there for them, in that they appear to have music licenses that allow them to do rather more than we've seen from Spotify and other platforms. So, you know, I think it's interesting. I mean, for me, I'm much more interested in when Apple is going to launch on Android, because Apple Music's on Android, Apple TV is now available on a Google Chromecast. So one would assume that if they can make some money out of podcasts, which of course at the moment they aren't, but if they can make some money out of podcasts, then getting onto the Android platform, which 79% of the world uses, would be a really canny move, I think. And that would be significant competition to Spotify and indeed to everybody else in this space. And I kind of do wonder why Apple hasn't done that yet. But I'm, you know, by the looks of things, they're getting onto some Microsoft platforms relatively soon, apparently. So we'll, you know, see whether or not there's a plan there too, I guess.
Yeah. So we can't talk about audio without talking about Clubhouse. I think it's a requirement with any audio conference. So
oh, good.
I guess the. I mean, I've been dabbling in there and I've seen a lot of folks trying different things. I guess the question for you as a keen observer is, have you seen any podcasters using Clubhouse in novel ways that you think is advancing their podcast or the business?
I mean, you know, there's a few. I mean, firstly, Clubhouse is like it's a system where they've given. Imagine they've given the worst people on LinkedIn a microphone. It's just like, my goodness me. But anyway, I have seen a number of people using a number of podcasters using it. You're not really supposed to record off Clubhouse, but some people have. The New Media Show, for example, with Todd Cochran and Rob Greenlee, did a great. Version of that show over the weekend, which had a lot of audience participation in there. There was a first yesterday afternoon. The Tech Meme Ride Home podcast was broadcast on Clubhouse, not recorded on it, as other podcasters have done, but just broadcast on it, which I think is a really interesting idea. It's definitely a novel use of Clubhouse, I think. I have to say, I don't want to be a downer on it, but I've used Twitter Spaces. That seems a great product. It seems a great opportunity. It's tied in with an app that many of us use every day. It's got verification in there. It's got following. It's got better management of different people in it as well. And I do wonder how long Clubhouse has. And I probably give Clubhouse another 6 months. I think that Twitter will take an awful lot of that, traffic away. But if that gets people more interested in audio, then I think that that's a fantastic thing. But probably conferences have more to worry about than podcasts do.
Yeah, I view it as a giant virtual event with less structure and less moderation, but it's fun. So Spotify mentioned it in Stream On, but they seemed a little lukewarm and cagey about it. So aside from Twitter, I mean, do you think this is the kind of features and functionality that are just going to start to pop up in a lot of different platforms, from Spotify to Twitter, which is already down there? Facebook has talked about it. Who do you think is in the best position, maybe aside from Twitter, or is it Twitter?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, Twitter has Twitter or Facebook are the obvious people who could make this work really well, because they're where your friends are already. They're where the people who you follow are already. And so therefore, that's far easier, I think, than, trying to get everybody to launch on a new platform. Twitter Spaces also works on Android phones. So there is always that too. So, I think it is interesting. I mean, with all of these things, I think it does make it really obvious that there is a real skill to being a live host of an event, that there's a skill there which you don't necessarily appreciate until you have sat through a number of Clubhouse rooms and realized that, this isn't quite as good an experience as you want it to be. So I think that, there's certainly a skill there. And I think also, there's certainly a skill in production of making sure that you get the right callers, making sure that you get the right input. And at the moment, people seem to be judging the next person who speaks based on their avatar, and that's kind of about it. And I wonder whether or not we'll see some better, plans on that in the future. Are you planning on using it and on any NPR podcast in the future?
There's been a lot of excitement, I think it's fair to say, and there's been some early efforts. I think the most visible probably have been Guy Raz and How I Built This has hosted quite a few chats. So he's had some founders of companies in, and I think it's very interesting because it does offer a level of engagement with the audience that you don't get in a podcast. So, there's 1,000 or 2,000 people in the room and somebody can be dragged on stage to talk. So that is new. I think we're all trying to figure out what it means, though.
Yeah, my daughter's a big fan of Guy Raz, but not for How I Built This, for Wow in the World instead.
I did too.
I can't stop her from listening to that podcast. Much though I would sometimes like to.
I have not been keeping track of time. So Lee or Kurt, I'm curious how much time we have left. And if anybody had any questions, maybe they can pop them in chat. I've got like one or two more questions I'd love to ask James.
Okay, Brian. Yeah, about 5 minutes would wrap it up.
Awesome. So I want to talk a little bit about the podcast index effort and the namespace 2.0. James, your coverage this week on the value tag was, I thought, really, really interesting. And for those who didn't see it, it's a way for podcasters to embed in the new namespace, a way for listeners to do a simple micropayment via crypto to directly to the publisher. And I think what was most innovative about it was that publishers or producers can determine different split levels. So you can say, I want my co-host to get 40%. I want the platform to get 5%. So it seemed pretty interesting. I guess the question is, you know, we worked for years to try to get remote audio data as an open standard across the industry, and it stalled with adoption at the platform level. Do you see this effort hitting the same roadblocks, or do you think that this is a little different?
I think it's a little different, if only because the amount of app developers in the podcast index, you know, chat rooms and stuff like that, and in GitHub and so on, is significantly more. I think it's more of a grassroots thing. And I think, you know, we are seeing a bunch of different, both podcast hosts, which is important that they support some of these new tags, but also podcast apps that are out there. Podfriend is probably the most polished version of that so far. You know, these particular, these new tags are being built in to a number of different podcast apps. Now, they're probably not going to be built into Spotify or Apple anytime soon, but certainly they are beginning to be built into a fair amount of apps. And, you know, you can listen if you want to the Pod News podcast and pay some Satoshi while you listen. And that is split between me and the podcast index themselves. You know, it's very geeky and very complicated still. And I really wish it was easier and simpler to understand. But I think there's something there in terms of being able to have, you know, Adam Curry calls it value for value, but being able to give something back to the podcaster, you know, that you're a fan of. And it's very much focused around, you know, giving something to a podcaster rather than around what some people see as, you know, a bit privacy concerning of knowing when I heard an advert. So, you know, I've certainly, you know, and I would anybody that's watching this that hasn't been involved in the chat room, I would certainly have a look at that. It's at podcastindex.social. And that's a fascinating sort of glimpse into the minds of some really good, clever developers, people who are working on podcasting, a bunch of podcast hosts in there as well. And it makes me very exciting, but I think very excited, but it's still, I think, a very early day for where we're going with that.
I agree. It's exciting. And everyone should get involved. I think James has been a champion of it, but this is an open effort and everybody who's in podcasting should be paying attention and contributing. So I see two questions in the chat for you, James. One is, can you see a situation in the future where radio stations broadcast selected programs or parts of their output in Clubhouse rooms? From Paul Chantler.
That's a great question from Paul, who is a very well-known radio consultant in the UK. So he's probably better equipped to answer this than I am. I would probably say that at the moment, Clubhouse lacks any of the production tools that you would need to do a good job of producing radio on that platform. There's no way of screening callers. There's no way of understanding what that particular caller's view is going to be. So I'm not necessarily sure that that's a plan for where the future is. But you could say that for all kinds of things. So you know, I'm always interested in seeing people use these sorts of tools. And they typically find some really interesting ways of using them that even Clubhouse wouldn't have thought of. So worthwhile keeping an eye on. But in terms of just rebroadcasting, radio, I'm not sure necessarily that that's going to be a particularly exciting thing.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel a little talk radio-y, but I think it's the talk and the live talk that makes it interesting. So seems like a hard dance to juggle the transmission with interaction from people in the room. So one last question. I think this is an easy one. What mic are you using, James? It looks really cool.
Well, for Matt Frederick, who's asking, this is a Rode Podcaster microphone. It's about $200, $200 Australian, so that means it's probably $2.50. And it's Australian, so there we go.
Sounds really good to me. So I think that's it. We're out of time. Thanks, James. And I think you can go to bed now.